This is Remote Ruby.
Have you any remote idea to the meaning of the word?
Hello, hello.
Yo. What's up, dog?
What's going on? Oh, you know, the usual. A little bit of this, a little bit of that. What's going on with you?
It's been a week. It's been one of those weeks. That's all I got.
Yeah, well, that is how it goes. I feel the same way. I just got back from a meeting with the cabinet place that our cabinet prices are going up 13%, which blows. Woo! So yeah, real fun. Not the best time to build a house, as I probably say every week. So further encouragement, don't do it. Go buy a house and renovate or something.
There you go. Don't buy a house. Chris Oliver, 2021.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah.
Well, we can go ahead and get into it since we apparently have had blah weeks. So this week on the podcast, we have Colin Gilbert. Colin's a software engineer at Impact, and he's one of my homies. Welcome to the show.
Hello, hello. Thank you. It's nice to be here. It'd be at, so like, this is Remote Ruby. As the intro says,
Ruby.
Lovely. The weather's nice.
The weather is great here.
Yeah, it's been good here too. Yeah. Yeah, you got to stick to the air conditioning.
Yeah, yeah. I was just out there getting a little sweaty.
Nice.
We had you on this week to kind of talk about being a junior Rails engineer and kind of your journey. And we wanted to talk a little bit about boot camps, I think, as well.
Yeah, I can just go into some background about that. So I started programming right around, I would say, September 2019, and definitely like very quickly fell in love with it. Growing up, like, all my friends were super into computers and stuff, and I was never that guy. I hung around them, but I spent most of my time skateboarding and stuff. So it's kind of ironic that later in life I landed here. Kind of wish if I could go back and extract some of that knowledge that they all had back then. But it is what it is, and that's how these things go sometimes. So after that, I decided to enroll in a boot camp. I went to Flatiron. I started that like November of that same year. So November 2019, that was a 9-month part-time program. So I did that, going through that course, started venturing out into doing some open source work, hopping in with the Ruby for Good organization over there. That was a lot of fun. That was my first real exposure to like a big production Rails app that dwarfed very much anything that I had created myself. So that was a very unique and very helpful learning experience. After graduation, this was about 3 months of job searching and doing some interviews here and there, a lot of no replies from applications, which was to be expected. But then January of this year, I landed the job I currently have at Impact, working with our mutual friend, Mr. Steve Polito. And that brings us up to present.
So you did the part-time boot camp. What if you had done like a full-time? You think there would be much of a difference, or why did you pick the part-time?
I picked the part-time just because it worked more with my schedule. And I also wanted to make sure that I had ample time like on the side to dig into some side stuff or anything I noticed like that really piqued my interest that I wanted to get further into. And I think if I would have gone with the full-time program, that wouldn't have been an option because it's extremely long days every day constantly, which was like that for me, like with the part-time program as well. But on my own accord, it was me who was making it the days be that long. You know, like they say, you know, expect to put in roughly about 32, I think, hours per week to stay kind of on track with the part-time program. But I mean, honestly, I probably was putting in 14-hour days for 9 months straight, pretty much, which helped a lot. I got to dig in like really deep on some things that I really found interesting. And I absolutely think that like overall just helped me get more up to speed like a lot quicker than if I would have just stuck with the stuff in the curriculum and not had that time to go dig deeper into anything.
It's like in school and you're forced to like write a paper about some topic you don't care about. You like really struggle with it. But if it's like, go write on something you're interested in, then you can go really deep into it. And like, that's a good way of approaching learning programming. go build stuff that you're interested in and is applicable and stuff. You don't have to get in the weeds of whatever other, I don't know, school is going to force you into like doing a little assembly or whatever. And you may not care. You might later, but like right now when you're learning, probably not. What's interesting is like, I love that idea of like, you could have done the full-time one, but they're going to cram all this stuff in really quick for you. And you get to take a little bit more time and actually figure out partly like programming is just so much stuff anyways. You're learning Rails, you got to learn HTML and CSS and Postgres and Redis and like a million things. Do you feel like that slower pace also helped you to retain the knowledge too? Because if it's so fast and loose on some of the full-time stuff, I would figure I personally would have a better time like taking it slower and repeating things a few times and kind of memorizing stuff.
100% for sure. Because I know myself, if I get a bunch of stuff crammed through something, you can forget about me retaining any of that. Like there's no way. So like I said, like it was just fun. Like I got to explore things that I enjoyed and it was like really fun to do, put in that extra time. And it just like further increased like my retention of all that stuff that I was learning through the actual program curriculum.
How were the projects that you did? Were they structured ones or more open-ended, or how did that all work?
So they were pretty open-ended. There's certain guidelines that you had to meet. For our Rails one, there was like a few requirements of like, you had to integrate OAuth. You had to have 3 or 4 has many belongs to relationships, 2 has many through relationships, like those sort of parameters. But as far as like what you built, you could do whatever you wanted so long as you had those things met.
I like that. It's not like a go build a to-do list or something specific. You get to like express your own interests in there a bit and make something that you might use every day, which that was really useful for me, where it was like, I built like a paste bin, or URL shortener was like a fun one too, where I was like, I could use Bitly or whatever, but I could build my own and then I could build this and maintain it and use it every day like I imagine people do in a real job.
Yeah, it was a really fun experience. And to backtrack to something you said earlier about learning like HTML and CSS, actually in that program, you don't actually even learn any of that stuff. So you kind of have to figure it out on the fly. Like you start at Ruby, or at least when I went through the program, you did. I think now they're swapping and you're learning JavaScript first and then moving into backend stuff. But we started with Ruby. The first project there, we had to build just like a command line app, which was super cool. We had to do like some web scraping and make something happen. That was actually really fun. Then from there, we went into some SQL stuff. Then we hit Sinatra. Then we got into Rails. And then after that, it was JavaScript. And then, of course, React. I mean, overall, like the projects were really open-ended. You could do whatever you wanted. So that made it fun. You could do something like you were saying, like that really interested you, that you would actually want to come back to and finish.
Why do you think they hit Sinatra before Rails? I have my own idea, but I'm curious what you think.
I think just more so due to the fact that it's a little simpler. It's very easy to see like, oh, actions that I'm building on this file, like, it's all right there. I can see everything that's coming in. It's not completely so like separate and isolated in different files. You kind of have to poke around a little more to figure out how to connect things and stuff. And not to say you have to do that a whole lot with Rails, obviously, because a lot of things are getting picked up by the autoloader and stuff. But just for like simplicity purposes and being able to get from, you know, building something on the command line to now getting a web application up and running, I think that's why they chose to like introduce Sinatra.
Yeah, it is definitely smaller. And I've never really done a lot with Sinatra, but I like the fact that the actions are much more explicit almost, and there's a little bit less magic. So I think it helps kind of more contextualize like how like rack applications work, which Sinatra is a rack app, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Someone. Okay, cool.
It is. Yeah. And like just the concept of like routes and Rails feels so foreign when you're like, this is a file that just defines the routes and says like, go somewhere else and actually run the code. It's nice when you're learning and you get Sinatra and it's like, here's the route, here's the code. And they're like glued together. You don't have to jump around much. And that saves a lot of trouble, like just wrapping your head around what it is you're writing, I think. Yeah, I think that's a really awesome place to start. And again, you had to learn HTML and CSS kind of on the side. HTTP alone is another whole thing you got to learn, which if you're not familiar with, is a fair bit of stuff. Post requests, put, patch, get, all of that is quite a bit to wrap your head around when you're like, truly behind the scenes, I am making a TCP connection and these two computers are sending text back and forth and they happen to be in this format. And like the new lines and everything are very strict. And you probably don't have to deal with that much or learn it too much and get by with learning Sinatra and stuff because the browsers and everything are so nice and Rack is good at handling all that. But at some point you're like, huh, this caching doesn't work or it works too well. And you're like, how do I debug this? Which brings up a question of how is this support when you walk into some problem that you can't solve? How did that whole thing work? Did you have TAs or work with other students? Or I'm really curious on how they set that up.
Yeah. So each little cohort, when you start the program, has a team lead or a cohort lead. You meet for office hours twice a week, which is really just about an hour and a half. Sometimes a go to if like we're really digging into something. And that's basically it. I mean, you can reach out on Slack and maybe get some help from your lead. But for the most part, it's a lot of DIY, which is good and sometimes bad because it's frustrating because you have no idea where to go to look for an answer. You just got to like try your best, try and like write the, like either copy the error and paste it or like get some sort of concept in your head and like try and word it as best you can in a Google search and hope for something to land on.
Do you guys realize how easy it is now with GitHub Copilot to be like, I want to do this and like, it'll just spit it out for you. You won't even have to learn anything now.
Oh my God. I'm so salty about this. How come everyone's in but me? This is not fair.
Yeah. So like, that's pretty much the way it went very early on though. I started hosting, what do we call them? It was like the after hours sessions. And basically I would just like fire up a Zoom and I'd just be in there hanging out and I would put out a big blast in our cohort channel. Like, hey, I'm hanging out. I'll be on for a while, just like hacking away on this lesson or whatever. If you want to join, here's the link, hop in. That got a lot of traction. It became pretty popular. A lot of people came in. We worked through issues together and helped people study up and practice for their assessments on their projects. Because every time you do a project, you have to then present it to another teacher that you've never met before. They go through it. They try and poke holes in it. And then they throw some like code challenges essentially, or they ask you to add a feature or like run you through some, not necessarily whiteboardish challenge, but or not whiteboarding challenge, but whiteboard-ish. So it was good like to have that. Also just kind of build our little like smaller cohort within the cohort. And like, it was a bit of a revolving door at times, but a lot of the core people stayed throughout the whole program, which was really cool. And like most of those people now, like, I mean, for sure, they're lifelong friends. Like, we all still chat to this day and still meet up. So that's cool.
That sounds like ambition. Callback to episode 135.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. I mean, you got to make things happen. I was just looking to make some friends and get through this stuff together. I wanted to see like everyone else get through the program as well and not have to like drop back or whatever. It can be pretty grueling. And like the cohort I started with, I think we started with like 32 people. And by the end of it, from the original cohort that started, I think there was maybe 4, maybe 5.
Wow. Yeah. That is intense. Yeah. Wow. Okay. Yeah. It makes sense though.
Wrap my head around that.
It makes sense though. Just like the sheer amount of things to learn. And in a way it's, you just have to have that deep interest in learning all this stuff to like survive through it all. Because if you get to a point where you're like, I don't care about SQL, you're never going to be able to build backend stuff if you don't want to learn some SQL, because that's how it all works. So yeah, that is a giant number of losses there.
Yeah, about halfway through the program, there was another cohort that was running in parallel with the one that I was in. Their teacher had to shift to a different cohort because that cohort's teacher left Flatiron. So they ended up merging the other one with the one that I was in. So we picked up some more people, but even from there, so like the number from my original group that made it to the end was about 5. Once we got the new cohort in, that number was probably 12 that made it from like the midpoint to the end.
Dang. Do you think the part-time made it harder for people? Would full-time attention make it a bit more, I don't know if it's necessarily easier, but you know, if that's your only focus for some people, if they're doing this like nights and weekends, I can't imagine how hard that would be to do that. It's hard enough to like, everybody's trying to build a little business on the side or whatever. Like that's so hard to do nights and weekends. So I was just curious what your thoughts on like full-time versus part-time. If either one is harder, maybe.
Yeah, I think it probably just depends on you. Like you need that drive or like need something to keep you like focused that like, yeah, you got to do this every day, day in, because you're in full time. You have no other choice. Like this is your life. If that works for you and you need that, full time might have been a better choice if you chose the part time instead. But I think like, I know for myself, once we got into Ruby and I like fell in love, it was not a problem for me to like want to come back every day or like put in those extra hours. So I really think a lot of it depends on you. But then also one of the points I have here that I'd like to make a note of is that like you have to want to like really get in there and do it. I think it's a good thing to maybe put in some work up front before you enroll in a boot camp to actually really find out if you really like it. You might feel good for a week, but then you might start losing a little bit of interest. And if you don't have that like drive to want to come back every day and keep that learning going, a boot camp program, no matter full-time or part-time, is probably not going to work for you because you just don't have the interest.
That's a great point. There was somewhere, I forget where I saw it, maybe an ad or something, and it was a prep boot camp before you go to a boot camp. And I was like, that's ridiculous. But no, it does make total sense. If you can't spend a month doing this on the side without getting tired of it, then that's going to be a sign that maybe a boot camp's not going to solve your problem. If motivation or interest or whatever is holding you back. I like taught myself in grade school a bit of programming, and like all I was doing was like seeing what other people were building and were like, I want to be able to do that. And that was my motivation, was like, I can build these command line apps and GW Basic on this DOS computer, but like there are people out there building websites. Like I want to do that. Or like desktop apps. And like they can put buttons on the screen. That's incredible. You know, they were so simple that I wanted to do, but it was enough to keep me going, to keep learning.
Sure. Yeah. And the other thing too, if you don't find that out beforehand, you're going to put yourself in a bad spot financially, because if you can pay for the bootcamp up front, I think last I knew it was like 15 grand at the time. I think they've nixed this since then, but there was also an ISA program, like an income share agreement thing, to where you could go through, not pay. But once you get a job, they start lopping off X amount of your paycheck every month. And when you do it that way, I mean, you're almost doubled. You're ending up at like 22.5 for the bootcamp when you said done. So like,
wow.
If you don't know that up front, that you like are definitely going to show up every day and put in the work to get through this and that you want to because you enjoy it, you're going to be in a rough place financially at some point very quickly in there.
Yeah, it's so strange. I mean, part of it's probably good. The financial thing can make sure some people are serious and like weed out people. But at the end of the day, it's like the companies should be the one paying to train people because that's who they're going to pay when they hire you. It doesn't seem like the bootcamp students or even university students should really be the ones footing the bill. That should be free education.
Wait, what?
Free education.
FBI, open up!
If you make it through this, then the companies will hire you to do this work because like, you get a Rails job and you're going to get paid 6 figures easy. So for a company to spend $15,000 to train a developer through a boot camp doesn't seem that expensive if they're going to pay you six figures for multiple years and benefits and everything else.
Absolutely. I wish it was more places like that. I know one of the people I had in my cohort at the end, he was already a developer and his company did give him like a budget for attending. I don't think they paid the full amount. I think they met him halfway or something with it. But
yeah,
which is still great. I mean, that's a huge savings for him. But I 100% agree. I wish there was more opportunity like that out there.
I don't know. I'm sure the companies partly feel it's risky to spend money or whatever. I don't know. It's fascinating. It definitely is some old way of doing things. And when we did Launch Code, it was like, we'll just have people who probably know how to code somewhat and pay them close to minimum wage and like give them 3 months. And if they do great, then we'll keep them. And if not, whatever. And just kind of bring back like a apprenticeship type of program. And it doesn't seem like enough companies are doing that. There's hardly any. And I feel like Impact's doing a great job of embracing that. They're going to get an amazing deal on great people who are driven and want to learn, which is like actually fascinating because that can be a really hard thing to like filter out when you're going through resumes of like mid or senior level developers. Maybe you want someone who is willing to go learn this new thing because that's what your company's doing, trying to build something new you've never done before. And a lot of companies like where my wife works is like, their developers do not want to learn anything new. They want to get paid to do what they're comfortable with and that's it. And they want to go home at 5 and like not ever think about programming again until tomorrow. That's not what I want to do when I have a job.
For me personally, like where I'm at right now, like I don't necessarily feel that I can afford that luxury. I'm like, yeah, I just want to go. And like when 5 o'clock comes, I don't want to think about it anymore. Because at this point, I'm only 6.5 months in to my first Rails job. So there's still a huge amount of things for me to learn. So clocking out at 5 doesn't necessarily end the day for me. I have a lot of other things I do like to continue that education and try to grow. Because for one, currently on the team, it's just myself and Mr. Polito. Between the two of us, we hold it down. In fact, shout out to him. He's holding it down right now while I'm doing this. But yeah.
Like, sorry, Steve.
But yeah, so like we have to be out there continuing to put in work and learning, because there's things that we run across every day where like we ping each other and we're like, any ideas? And we just like, we'll have to hop on a call together and start digging through things and figuring it out together. So yeah, I think right now for me, I think also for anyone like new, you got to keep it going, keep digging and keep researching things and digging deeper and grow and just educating yourself and sharing that.
I just want to give a quick shout out to our sponsor, Honey Badger. They're a single platform for error monitoring, uptime monitoring, and cron monitoring. I've blown away several people because of the real-time error monitoring with Honey Badger. I've caught an error and fixed it before the customer could even email me and say that something was wrong. They get pretty blown away by that experience, and it always makes my day. So thanks to Honey Badger for making that even possible. Star Josh and Ben created Honey Badger as a 100% bootstrapped monitoring solution. Without investors breathing down their necks, they can spend all their time making a better product for you, the developer. So check them out at honeybadger.io and let them know you heard about them on Remote Ruby.
It's probably important to, and I know you and I have talked about this, continuing to like further your education after working on the weekends and doing side projects and stuff is really good. And I think very important and sets you apart in several ways, but continuing to work after work is not good, which I don't think you were referring to, but just to draw that like distinction of, we're not talking about like 5 o'clock comes around and you keep working. We're talking about reading blog posts and working on side projects. And you and I do stuff in the evenings and pairing with people and stuff like that. Not working for your employer after you're done working for that day.
Correct. Thank you for making that clarifying point, because I'm going to be 100% honest, guilty as charged fully for like the first probably 3 or 4 months. I was definitely very guilty of that, because I felt like I would see Steve, and then at the time we had another developer, shout out Morgan, and
I would just see the rate at which they were pumping things out. And I was like, man, I'm not coming close to the output that they're doing. I'm like, I got to get after it. But I definitely found out pretty quickly that is not the way to go, because I definitely burned myself out for sure after like the first 3 or 4 months.
So would you recommend people do a boot camp if they decide like this is what would be right for me? Is that something that you, as someone who went through it, would recommend to people?
I would say yes. If you need that structured environment, if you know you have the drive, or maybe you have the drive, but you don't necessarily know like what to do or like what to build, that sort of thing. Like if you need some direction and that's on a very like tight time schedule, I would say, yeah, I would definitely recommend a boot camp. I would also say though, like you might be able to get that direction elsewhere without doing that. I think it's kind of up to you, like what you feel comfortable doing. Like, are you willing and open to like putting yourself out there and like trying to connect with people and do things? If you are, you might not necessarily need the boot camp. Apparently, like making friends on the internet and trying to work on projects together or getting involved with some open source stuff. I think you can go a long way with that. And I say that for myself too. Like I mentioned earlier, when I started like doing work with Ruby for Good, like that was a huge eye-opening moment for me, because that was like, wow, this is real world stuff here. But I wouldn't necessarily say don't go to a boot camp. I think just be conscious and do your due diligence to like check all the boxes and make sure you're really ready for that commitment. Because if you are, I do think it's a good resource. You make friends, you get some guidance, both like in the programming side of things and on the job search side of things as well.
I was just about to ask about that. So when you get towards the end, I assume, do they help you with interviewing at companies and things like that? How's that work?
I think it's about 3 weeks before you actually like graduate. They connect you with a career coach and you start working with them to build out your resume. They also connect you with a mock cultural interview. And then they'd set up through some company like a mock technical interview as well. So you get one of each of those. Like you can get more, but I think you have to pay after that, at least for the mock technical ones. But they do each of those things and then they help you like kind of make sure all your social media stuff is in line and looking fresh and sparkly. But really at the end of the day, like it's you out there looking for the jobs. You have to report back like, I applied to here and here. I reached out to this person, made this connection, that sort of stuff. But that's what that picture looks like as far as the career guidance.
I mean, I don't even think we got any mock interviews, but I went to college and had a CS degree and they have their career center thing and you wrote your resume and took it in there and whatever, they critiqued it and stuff, but it was still pretty much on your own. And that makes sense. Like everybody's going to have an ideal type of job that they want and environment and all that stuff. So I can understand that. How did you feel getting to that point of like, okay, you're kind of on your own to go start interviewing? Where do you find jobs? And like, you're a junior. So where do you find the junior Rails jobs? Because that is a rare thing right now.
So to start on that question, feeling alone in that, I was fine because I felt pretty alone in it from the very beginning, even going through the program, because I knew right away I wanted to work with Ruby. I wanted to work with Rails. And they definitely tried to push you to, like, maybe you ought to be looking at some JavaScript jobs. There's not much out there in the way of Rails, especially for juniors. Like, it's probably not going to happen. So have you considered making a switch, this, that, and the other? So, like, once those conversations started coming down, I knew like, for one, screw you. I'm now going like even more full force into this. So that just like, it furthered that divide. I felt more on my own, but at the same time, it like drove me exponentially more as well. It's like, keep at it, keep going. And like, I'm going to make it happen. Like it's going to happen for sure now.
So you and I had a tough conversation about that, right? That conversation that happened. And it pissed me off, right? But that's just because I like Ruby and I'm like, why, what, where, and how? But that's one thing that you got to think about when you're going through a boot camp. At the end of the day, especially if you're on one of those programs where they're incentivized to find you a job, not necessarily the job you want. because if they don't find you a job, then they lose money. I mean, depending on the way you have things worked out. So keep that in mind that they might not necessarily have your best interests at heart. They have a goal and an objective that they're trying to execute. But I thought it was very telling that when that conversation happened and we talked, it was even more resolved for you that you were going to succeed. And that to me said something about you and your personality that I've continually seen. So here's a hard question. Should people still be learning Ruby in boot camps?
So I 100% think so. However, I think as Ruby and as Rails developers, we have a lot of responsibility to keep it open and pull in those juniors so that those boot camps do still teach that. And so that there are new Ruby jobs out there and more companies see that the community is growing, start to understand more of why and start adopting that more. And that's just going to help everyone out. I think right now, like, the community is great. I don't want to see it die. Like, let's keep it going. Let's grow it. But we have that responsibility now to like really make that change and like start doing some action on it.
But and that was kind of one of our objectives for Ruby Radar. There's a lot of cool things happening in the community constantly that like you may not be privy to, but like it is happening. And one of our goals when we started Ruby Radar was to showcase that like, look, there are articles being written about Ruby every single day. There are people posting about jobs about Ruby every single day. Videos are coming out, podcasts are being made. The Ruby community is not dying. And if anything, I think it's growing. But that was one of our goals of making Ruby Radar was like, we want to show people that things aren't dying, that things are still cool, and also provide a resource for keeping up with the latest stuff, right?
Yeah, totally. And I think part of the reason why like a lot of boot camps are starting to not teach it so much anymore is because they see how many jobs there are out there doing React and stuff like that. And I think a lot of people are attracted to that. You know, some people really want to go work at Google or some really want to go work at Amazon. Like, that's cool. Yeah, there probably are more of those jobs out there doing React and some sort of JavaScript, what have you. But at the same time, there's an exponentially larger number of people going after those jobs too. So I kind of feel like the ratio is probably pretty close. But I think just the way, because it seems like it's there's so much more opportunity out there, that's why they're pushing those technologies and starting to slowly kill out teaching some Ruby stuff.
Yeah, that makes sense. I remember in school, there was a bunch of students that were like, oh, I want to go work for Google or Amazon or whatever. And like that drove some people. But then for me, it was like, I like Python and I like Ruby and I want to do that. And yeah, maybe Google uses Python. Maybe that would be fun. I'm more interested in doing something I enjoy than the goal wasn't to work at Google or something. And everybody's probably going to be different. And that's okay. If you're interested in just coding in general, you can pick any language. They're all awesome in different ways. You could do .NET and go work for Microsoft or some company that does a bunch of that stuff. But we'll maybe look down on you a little bit from Ruby land.
It's funny you said that because we have a lot of .NET. I'm in Louisiana and there's a lot of .NET jobs out there. And when that conversation happened where that person had mentioned like, maybe you ought to think about looking at doing some React or something. The other thing they said was, or .NET, there's a lot of .NET jobs down where you are. Maybe you should do that.
Yeah, we have the same in St. Louis. There is so much like Java and .NET. And I'm like, none of that interests me.
Yeah.
And what are people writing with .NET? I don't even know.
I don't know, but for me at the time, like, I'm not going to learn something new like right now. Are you kidding me? I'm trying to like get way better at what I know now. Like, I don't want to be a jack of all trades and a master of none. I want to get good at something. I can't keep jumping around to everything.
Yeah. So what advice would you have for junior Ruby developers as someone who is one, but also someone who got a job and did manage to get out of that, you know, situation?
Yeah, I would definitely say like, listen to podcasts. The overarching theme here is just going to be get involved somehow. But like, I know for sure, like some of the things I did, I would listen to podcasts. But like, if people were on there that I thought were great, or like, I really liked something that they talked about, like, I would just reach out to them and be like, hey, I heard you on this. Like, I really liked your talk and like I'm going to dig a little bit more into this now myself, because this maybe this was something that I didn't even know about, but now I find it interesting and something I want to explore further. Like reaching out to say thank you, not really having like any other ulterior motives behind it, like not trying to like take them out for coffee and get a job or anything like that, just like genuinely thanking them and like just making acquaintances. I'd say that's a big piece. I would definitely say also like get involved in some open source stuff. And again, I can't like shout out Ruby for Good enough because they were super helpful for me. So if you have any interest in that, I would definitely say that's a great place to start. There's plenty of other places you can look to, but that's one for sure. I would definitely say start making friends like Andrew, like you and I did. You had put out some stuff about being willing to pair. I was like, yeah, let's do it. I'd found like a Ruby for Good issue that I wanted to work on and did some research ahead of time, and we hopped on and we did it. And you had mentioned this in a previous episode, like you just got to show up, follow through on the things you say you're going to do, even if it scares you. I mean, I was scared. I'm going to meet with the, you know, remote Ruby and the Ruby Blend dude. I'm going to see him face to face, and now I got to like talk to him. Like I was nervous, but like you got to go for those things. So I would definitely say that like those things are great. Share your learnings, like no matter how small. I shared something a while back last year sometime, like a simple little thing about like the Ruby partition method. Picked up some traction. Just some like senior Rubyists that I know, like they were like, I didn't know about that. So it's cool. You don't have to be like feel ashamed of like, oh, this is too small or silly to like share anything about. It's new to me, yes, but like some other people were like, they're like, yeah, duh. Like they're not going to look at you like that. So just share things, help out, get involved, reach out to people genuinely. Very huge, not fan of networking. So I don't feel networking is a great approach. I'd rather just make friends. I think that definitely played a good hand for me. So those are, I would say that's probably the main things. And just like do what you love. Like for me, like I said earlier, I knew right away like Ruby was what I wanted to do. And everybody else very much was like super into React and stuff like that as we went down through the program. And I wasn't going to get swayed. I found my passion and stuck with it. So I think do that and embrace it and just trust everything to work out.
Trust but verify, right?
Trust but verify.
Yeah, you just turn off the SSL verification. It's fine. Yeah.
Cool. Anything else we want to talk about while we're here?
I'll say one final point. Ask good questions during your interviews if you get to that point. If they ask you if you have any questions for them, do so. I would ask what's like your build cycles like how often are y'all sprinting? Like what are we doing? 2 weeks, 1 week? What's going on there? I would ask about meeting cadences, that sort of stuff. Cause I think those can all be big pieces of getting better insight into the company that you're going to be going to work for. Cause I think the natural tendency, everybody wants to paint a pretty picture, get you in the door, but make sure for yourself that you feel it's a good fit for you.
Yeah. And ask about the team makeup, because you don't want to join a team with full of jackasses or a team that like is not diverse at all or and things like that. Like those are also good questions to learn about and ask about.
Yeah. Or like, do y'all pair program at all? What's that like? Code reviews? Any of that?
Yeah. And you can ask too about like the last junior that they hired. How did they do? You know, what did they struggle with? Those are really good questions to find out.
And if you can talk to them.
Yeah, definitely. If you can talk to them, that's going to give you enormous insight. Someone coming in like me in the past, how did they do? What worked? What didn't? All those things would be amazing to learn. I definitely was like the nervous interviewer the first few times and was like, do you have any questions? No, not really. Like, I look back on that and I'm like, I definitely did. I just didn't ask any because I was nervous. Just write down a couple if you need to, but it does make a big difference and a good impression on the interview because they're like, oh, this person's curious about stuff and how we operate and what they can learn from it. And it's a good sign. Well, cool. Yeah, this is great. I enjoyed this. We should have done this a very long time ago, I feel like.
I was scared. Remember, like when I reached out to you and you were like, you want to come on? I was like, no, I've been dreading this question.
Yeah, no. Well, you did good. And you answered the question correctly of whether or not bootcamp should still be teaching Ruby. Because if you were going to say no, I was just going to hang up the Zoom and end the podcast right there.
Scrap it right there.
Trash and ship. Yeah, thank you all a bunch for having me on. This was super fun. I'm glad it finally happened too.
Yeah, well, where can people find you on the old interwebs?
Yep, I'm on the interwebs. I'm on the Twitter sphere, Colin Gilbert, I think. Colin _ Gilbert, perhaps. You'll find it. There's probably only one of me out there, I hope. I'm the dude. Again, you'll probably mistake for Adam Driver. But yeah, you can mostly find me there. I have a LinkedIn. I don't really get on it too often, so it's probably not the best place. Twitter's probably the best place to reach out and feel free to. I will totally pay it forward like Andrew Mason did with me. If you want to pair on something, work on an issue, I'm down. Let's do it. Don't be scared.
And follow Ruby Radar.
Damn it.
And Remote Ruby.
Follow all the things.
Yeah. We didn't talk about it, but just to like make it clear for anyone listening, Colin is my co-editor for Ruby Radar and we work on that together. And he's the one that makes sure that I follow through.
We're on a tight ship over here.
Yeah. Sometimes some newsletters may not go out if it wasn't for Colin keeping me on my toes. So,
yeah. Cool. So to that point, if you have anything, feel free to drop it to us. And especially if you're a junior, drop us a little couple sentence blurb about yourself. We've been wanting to do like some junior spotlight stuff, but so far no takers. So get that first like one.
What? Someone says, I'll put you in my newsletter if you're looking for a job. I have 800 Rails developers and no one responds. It's ridiculous. Come on, people.
Got to get after it. Show up. Get that gold medal, that number one spot.
Make it happen. And then you'll be on the podcast next once you get your job. It's just the theme that's happening, it seems like.
All right. Colin, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you all so much again for having me. This was a blast.